Welcome to Educators to Educators. I'm Carrie Conover, and this is episode 11, Tasks Before Apps. If this is your first time listening to E2E, thank you for joining us. And to my faithful listeners, thank you for returning. I'm Carrie, and I was a teacher for 10 years in the Chicago Public Schools. During my time in the classroom, I was given one of the first one-to-one iPad carts in the country, and my passion for educational technology was born. After those 10 years, I spent 4 years working for two educational companies and had the opportunity to travel the country, working with hundreds of school districts and thousands of teachers. I began Educators to Educators podcast as a place to shine a spotlight on outstanding teaching and learning, as well as provide insight and professional development for educators. Today, we are joined by Dr. Monica Burns, a curriculum and EdTech consultant, Apple Distinguished Educator, and founder of ClassTechTips.com. Monica has presented to teachers, administrators, and tech enthusiasts at numerous national and international conferences, and is a regular contributor to Edutopia. Monica is an author and most recently wrote Tasks Before Apps, Designing Rigorous Learning in a Tech-Rich Classroom. Monica, thank you so much for joining us on Educators to Educators.
I'm so excited to be here with you.
So today we're going to be discussing the topic of tasks before apps. And even though I worked in ed tech for a long time and worked for a lot of educational technology companies, I could not agree more with the theme of your new book, Monica.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to hear that and appreciate that because it's my like gut check. It helps anchor me when I'm thinking or getting excited about something new.
Yeah, absolutely. The theme resonated with me right away. And for our listeners, if this is the first time you've listened to E2E, we follow a format in which we talk about one larger theme or topic, and then we discuss three areas within that topic, just so you have a nice little takeaway from this podcast. And so today we're going to discuss creation, curiosity, and collaboration in relationship to technology in the classroom. So Monica, let's dive in. Can you first tell us just a little bit about Tasks Before Apps, your new book?
Sure. So I taught in the New York City public schools for a number of years, and my last two were one-to-one iPad. And that's when I started blogging and sharing about different things. And, you know, I am so guilty. And I love all the listicles, right? The 15 favorite, the 14 ways and all of those things. And it's a great way to get people in the door and excited about new technology and kind of get their wheels spinning. But I wanted to make sure that any of those moments where I'm talking about tech integration was really anchored in this idea of putting the learning first. And so that's where my phrase tasks before apps came from. And I met with the folks at ASCD who published my latest book, and we were chatting. And that, you know, phrase really resonated with them too. And so the book kind of stems from that, of giving teachers big ideas to think about tech integration more broadly, but then also really actionable lesson ideas, activities, strategies for putting those three big things into work in different learning environments. So the book is actually organized with those three chapters. And there's more than just that, but featured within in three chapters, one on creation, one on collaboration, one on curiosity, and then diving really deep into task development to lay a foundation, and then also strategies for making it happen in the classroom.
So it sounds like this book is great for all levels of tech integration. So maybe you're a new teacher, new to technology. It sounds like you could almost read this book a couple of times and get something new from it every time you read it. But then also for a veteran teacher who's been using technology for a while, a good refresh to how they're thinking about integration in their classroom.
Absolutely. And so, you know, from the K-12 spectrum of things within the book, I'll give an example or idea, or actually like a big idea of what it might look like, but then I'll give the in a first grade classroom, in a fourth grade classroom, in a 10th grade classroom. So just to give really specific examples of what this looks like in action, so that it can be put into practice in different learning environments. And, you know, there's a school I know of right now who's using this book with pre-service teachers. So with teachers who are, you know, in college prepping to get into the classroom, and then other teachers who are out and about, have spent many years in the classroom, who are diving into their resource and, you know, tweeting at me as they're reading the book, which has been really exciting to see just how it's been received from people with different backgrounds.
Great. And as you're speaking, I'm thinking about, what do you think when you're thinking of creation and tasks and apps, right? So can you talk about what teachers would want to think about as they're getting ready to introduce a new technology to the children?
Yep. So just this morning, I was having a conversation doing like a virtual PD with a school and hosting a webinar for them where we were talking about this idea of content consumption and content creation. And so within the book, I kind of introduce both of those terms in case they're new for folks and just talk about the importance of acknowledging how essential digital tools are for the way we consume content. So we read, we watch, we view, we interact with a screen in that way in a just a way we couldn't before, but then also making sure that we're pushing our thinking to say, how are students showing what they know? How are they capturing their thinking and creating a product? So within this task before apps mentality, it's really about, you know, looking for open-ended tools where students can apply what they've learned no matter what age or what content area, as opposed to a tool that might be, you know, working through levels or solving problems. Not to say that that's not useful and important in other parts of the day, but from a creation standpoint, giving kids the power with support to make a product that demonstrates their understanding and is really shareable with the world.
You know, it's interesting. I always say, teachers, we love control. Like, I loved control in my classroom. We have to have control of what's going on in our classroom. And I found, as I was talking to teachers, that the creation part is sometimes the hardest because you lose a lot of that control, because you might have 30 students and they all start to go in a different direction. So what advice would you give to teachers that are a little nervous about letting go of that control and letting that creation piece into their classroom?
Absolutely. And so what for me is so important, and something I elaborate on and give examples of in the book, is making sure we're giving students the guidance and support they need in order to dive into these experiences of creating a product, right? Handing them a camera or handing them a movie making app, you know, will produce a particular type of product. But if we want it to be really aligned to our content area goals, we need to provide some structure for that too. So maybe it's having kids come together and watch exemplars and reflect on that final product someone else has made. Or maybe they're developing a checklist together or examining a rubric to say, what does my final product need to have in order to show that I really understand this particular topic and can apply it. So having structures, having routines, right? All of those things are important and really should be part of the process. And that's when, you know, I'm talking about this thoughtful task development. It's really about identifying your learning goals, putting the learning first, and then saying, which type of open-ended creation tool is going to be the best to help my kids tell the world the story of their learning?
And that's really where you see the joy and excitement and light bulb turn on for kids, is when they get to that creation stage.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's their chance to jump in, to show what they know, to be really proud of what they are doing in the classroom, and to have an audience for that work as well.
Can you talk a little bit about how, if a teacher's in this planning stage, you mentioned to pick the appropriate tool for this product. Can you talk a little bit about how a teacher would find that or how they would evaluate that tool?
So there's lots of great resources. And, you know, as I said, you know, I blog and share my list of favorites. And I, of course, call out plenty in the book too. But it's really about deciding, what is it that you want your kids to show off? And then what kind of support will they need? And how can we use digital tools to really elevate that experience, energize that experience, and then, of course, you know, level the playing field for students too. So if you know that your students are conversationally proficient in English, but they struggle as writers to compose sentences, it's not that you're going to abandon that type of instruction, but you might bring in an ebook that has a lot of audio opportunities for kids to record their voice. So it's part of knowing what the final product, what the audience is going to need to connect with students' work. So maybe a video you're going to play and show in a space, but also making sure students have the ability to show what they know and leveraging the power of different digital tools.
Yeah, and I think there's something powerful that I did in my classroom where I was overwhelmed even way back in the beginning. This was 5 years ago, where and things have changed, but I would actually download tools to my students' iPads and put them in Teams on Friday afternoon and say, explore this app or explore this tool, learn how to use it, and then I want you to present to me what's great about this tool, what might get in your way. And so I actually put that work back into the students' hands and had them help me curate our favorite, you know, creation tools.
Yeah. And part of that, right, ownership and transferring that ownership to students is, you know, about letting them become an expert, letting them support their partners. So I talk a lot about that idea of expert groups too, right? You might have one or two students who are going to be that person who, you know, you're really setting up for success in those ask three before me type of strategies, so that there's people who are empowered in your room, who can support others, and just that right there of teaching someone else how to do something, how to try something new is really something that can help build some agency and ownership as well.
Great. That's amazing. And I just finished actually getting, I just released this morning an episode on resilience. I talked to an emotional intelligence expert, and we were talking about resilience in kids. And one of the things that actually helps kids learn resilience is their social network and networking with other students and identifying what other students are good at and how they can lean on those students.
I love that.
It was a fascinating episode, but I think it's interesting how it just weaves through everything. And I have to imagine that this will lend itself to this curiosity of children and how you think about tasks before apps in the realm of curiosity.
Yeah. So when it comes to the curiosity component, it's really about getting kids interested and excited about the world around them. So helping with that, you don't know what you don't know piece, but then also honoring student curiosity of what they're excited about and interested about too. So, you know, on one part of that is, what is it that students want to know, right? That they want to explore deeper, and threading that into content area goals. So when students are writing persuasively or creating public service announcements to connect to persuasive writing goals, right? What are those topics? How is that meaningful and relevant for students? And then the other part is kind of getting their wheels spinning, getting them into different opportunities. Maybe it's Skyping with a class far away and asking questions about what their life is like, and then applying that in different moments of the day. So yeah, curiosity is essential in these moments, especially as it comes to the student products, right? How can we make this meaningful and relevant for them?
Yeah. And I think as teachers, I've talked about this before, but it's really easy for teachers to feel isolated within their four walls of their classroom, right? We have colleagues and we get to see them, but at the end of the day, we spend most of our time alone with our class. And I really encourage hearing you say that for teachers to reach out to other teachers, even across, maybe you're studying the regions of the United States and you live in the Northeast. Find a teacher on Instagram or, you know, on Twitter that's in, you know, California, and Skype with them and show and model that curiosity and that willingness to kind of put yourself out there, I think is really important.
Yeah. And this whole idea of modeling, you know, lifelong learning really shows students that this is not something that just happens during period four or during the literacy block or the math block, right? Like if you walk into the room and you share with students something interesting you heard on a podcast that you're curious to learn more about, or in the middle of the day, if someone asks a question and it leads to another question, right? How are you showing that you're going to make a note for yourself and Google that later, right? So this idea of cultivating a wonder mindset for students, getting them wondering about the world, showing them that you are curious and what it looks like to find answers to questions and ask questions that there aren't answers to is so important. And, you know, we often think about those really, you know, testable moments, right? What is it that's going to be on the test? What is it that the kids are going to be tested on? But these are the real world opportunities that help them become smarter consumers of content as they're looking to find answers to their questions, and also just get them excited about topics and things they might not originally have dedicated time to exploring.
And we also have to allow the opportunity for kids to ask questions that we don't know the answer to, which is tough, right? Like, okay, we've all been asked questions by students that we have no idea. Yeah. Like, I remember once this little boy asked me why men don't shave their legs, like in front of the whole class. And I was so taken aback by the question. And I just simply said, I don't really know the answer to that, but I bet we can figure it out.
Right.
And that can be a really uncomfortable moment, but we have to kind of take those quirky moments and turn them into teaching moments, I think.
Right. Like, who could we ask about that? Who's an expert on that, right? Who knows about what life was like long ago that we could write an email to and ask them that question, right? Who's the local historian or someone at a university who's written a book about something like this, right? So just showing them that there's pathways to not just pose a question and walk away, but to find an answer for their question too.
Yes. And teaching them that there's experts, right? Like, the teacher's not always the expert. That's why we have all this technology and resources that we can find those experts.
Absolutely.
Let's turn and talk about collaboration. So I think one of the fears out there is that technology is going to take over teaching. It's going to take over kids' lives. Kids don't talk to each other anymore. I'm so sick of people complaining about kids being on technology at restaurants. I mean, I think people have this real fear that we're going to lose collaboration and we're going to lose communication with our children as they grow up. So let's talk about that element of collaboration.
Yeah, well, within, you know, Task Before Apps, I talk about a couple different types of collaboration, one of which is, you know, shared screen collaboration. So, you know, there are plenty of days where even though my students each have their own iPad, that I'm asking them, only the odd kids to take their iPad out of the cart, or only the even kids take their iPad out of the cart, because I want you to lean over that screen. I want you to talk to one another. I want you to dive into this. I want you to think critically and compromise and support your opinion and evaluate what someone else is doing. So, right, collaboration can be that Google Docs. We both log in from two different places or while we're sitting next to each other and work together. Or it can be those conversations where we're leveraging, you know, different types of tech experiences and still talking about things too. So, you know, with that idea, it's partly, you know, being really purposeful of designing experiences where we're providing opportunities for kids to talk and work through and problem solve together, which, you know, mirrors the expectation in the real world. But it's also thinking about what are the skills, the collaborative skills students need that we didn't need when we were growing up, right? The idea of commenting, of curating resources, of sharing resources, right? You could make an argument that in some way we've always done that, but now, you know, in digital spaces, it feels different. It looks different. So the more we can give kids an opportunity to talk about their work, to reflect on other folks, you know, in the process of their peers, to give feedback in that way. Right, those are transferable skills that go into other spaces as well. So they are then able to take that and apply it when they are on commenting on a blog or curating resources to share with someone on a social media platform. So I think these things are so relevant. And, you know, I just, like you mentioned, right, it's frustrating when people are dismissive of it or don't place value in it. But I think part of it, you know, is those of us who are in this space, you know, we need to take on that responsibility of just communicating the benefits of this as much as possible and providing examples to help people understand what this looks like in action.
Absolutely. And if you think about you and I, Monica, we've never met face to face, but look at us collaborating in this space right now, right? And I think you're absolutely right, highlighting to parents and to the community what students are getting, what skills they're practicing for that real world when they do get out into the real world and start contributing. One thing you brought up was curation. And I think curation is a really, I mean, I never knew what curation was as a kid, right? Like, we just got books. Our teachers gave us books or encyclopedias, and that's what we believed. So can you talk a little bit about curation and collaboration? You know, how are we curating these resources for our students to look at? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So in my first book, which is called Deeper Learning with QR Codes and Augmented Reality, I introduced this idea of the ACEs framework. So it's access, curate, engage, and share. And so in this book, in Task Before Apps, I build upon that with thinking about technology integration for specific learning experiences for students. And so the idea here is that, you know, we can use technology to help curate resources to kids have just right materials, whether that's just right from like a leveled reader perspective or just right connected to their interests and what they're excited about. But also, we want to empower students to be curators too, and that can be a collaborative process. So helping them evaluate resources that someone else is giving them. So picking and choosing what, you know, makes the most sense. And in some ways, you know, we've done this as students ourselves, probably, right? With annotated bibliographies and what, you know, felt like it was the most relevant content to bring into a more traditional piece of writing. But kids' access to online materials, right? It's overwhelming for us. So for them, right, navigating these spaces, it's about being able to evaluate, being able to work with others and figure out like what's going to help solve those problems. So from a collaboration standpoint, coming together, collecting resources, right, that's something that as adult collaborators we do when we're developing curriculum or infusing tech into curriculum. But students need to build that capacity because it's something they'll have to do in whatever industry they enter into, is navigate a space, pick out what information is reliable and useful, and perhaps share that with someone else.
Monica, before we end today, I would like you to share with everyone how they can get in touch with you and read some of this amazing work that you've been doing.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. First off, to share some of these things, my blog, classtechtips.com, is where I post almost every day lots of favorites and ideas for classrooms. And then my newsletter goes out every Monday, which is just classtechtips.com/signup. And I'm on Facebook and Pinterest and Twitter at Class Tech Tips for all of those. And my new book, Tasks Before Apps, is up on Amazon. So it's in paperback and in Kindle. And of course, if you want lots of copies, I can always help you out with that too, because ASCD has been really great about bulk discounts for schools as well.
Wonderful. Well, I'm just so honored that you took the time to speak with me today and be part of this Educators to Educators network. Monica, what is one tip or takeaway that you would give teachers listening to this podcast today around creation, curiosity, and collaboration?
I think the one tip that, you know, I know resonates when I talk to teachers and I kind of see those eyes, kind of feel like that I'm hearing them and I'm acknowledging them when I'm giving a presentation or working with a school. And that tip is really to keep your tool belt light. There's so many wonderful things. I'll often come to places and share lots of favorites, not because I want people using everything, but because I want them to find what's going to fit best for them. So choose that one or two things you want to spend some time diving into that you'll bring into your classroom because you know it connects to your students' needs and interests and learning goals, and focus on that and then keep that tool belt growing, but don't let it weigh you down.
I absolutely love that. What a wonderful way to end this podcast, Monica. It's been a pleasure to spend this time with you today. And for all you teachers out there, please reach out to Monica, get her new book, give it a read. It's amazing. Monica, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
I can't believe Educators to Educators is coming to the end of its first season. It's been an incredible journey, and I've loved getting to know all of you. Next week, I'll be releasing a highlight reel to wrap up 2018. We're going to take a look back at all 11 episodes of the first season of Educators to Educators. I hope all of you have a wonderful holiday season and a happy start to 2018. Until next time, keep on teaching on.